Good.
Thank you. So I'll be talking about experiments also. And this work has been done with my student, Xiaoshan Shen. What I'll do is very briefly outline some earlier work on passive scalar fluctuations in turbulence, and then I'll come to the main part of my talk, which is on the small-scale anisotropy in high Reynolds number turbulence, it's R lambdas of around 100, in simple shear flows. And the two types of flows that I have in, that I'll be talking about, pardon? 1,000, pardon?
R lambda 1,000.
Okay, so the two types of flow, first I'll talk about, these are both very simple experiments. One is having isotropic turbulence with a linear temperature gradient in it. The temperature gradient produces anisotropy, of course, at the large scale as a flux down the gradient. The question is what is happening at the small scale. We know the answer to this now, and that the small scale is anisotropic, and it's not a controversial answer. I'll briefly outline this. The bigger question is what happens if you do a similar experiment with velocity, if you have an imposed shear in a flow and correctly measure statistics that give an indication of what is happening at the small scale, and the question is the small scale isotropic. And the folk wisdom since Kolmogorov 1941, which is the local isotropy postulate, is that small scale velocity field, if the Reynolds number is high enough, the statistics are isotropic. Okay, so that's the experiments I'll be describing. Just to remind you that about real flows, here's a nice photograph from Srini, and although I'll be talking about simpler flows, that when you look at scalars, this is a jet. If you look at scalars in a jet, you'll see there are mean there's fluctuations in concentration, and there's a mean concentration gradient, high concentration in the center, varying across the flow and decreasing as you go down the flow. And the same sorts of things occur when you look at boundary layers, very sharp, within these flows you see very, very sharp gradients of concentration in both types of flow. And if you put a probe that can measure the scalar fluctuations in a flow like this, you measure ramp cliff structures. So you're putting a probe in here, just a simple temperature or scalar probe, and instead of you measure the fluctuating scalar, and these have very, very sharp cliffs that occur. This was first observed in the atmosphere by Stewart in the late 60s, and lots of nice work was done by Carl Gibson and Srini and Antonio and many others, and it's a very, very well documented event. And what is, of course, the puzzle is that there are these sharp steps in the scalar gradient that are occurring over an RMS, and they're occurring very, very sharply, and so they thicken with molecular diffusivity and not with eddy diffusivity. So these are sharp microscale events that lead to anisotropy at the small scale. Over the years, a number of statistics have been documented, and the best thing is to measure a third-order statistic, a skewness of the probability distribution. There's a lot of scatter, as Srini has pointed out. This is a compilation of his. But the point is, even up, these are atmospheric measurements, even up to an R lambda of 10 to the fourth, which is extremely high, the value is always well above 0.4. The argument is that it's not going down with Reynolds number, although in some experiments it appears to. So this is the derivative skewness. You take a probe, measure the derivative, and normalize it by the RMS. And the way you look at these things is looking at the PDF. Here's some work by Gibson and his associates done in the 70s, and you look at the PDF and integrate both sides, and you see the difference gives you the skewness. The scatter is remarkable, but that's the way it is. These derivative, these particularly odd order moments are particularly difficult to measure. We have done a more idealized experiment in the laboratory by having decaying grid turbulence and imposing a linear scalar gradient and then measuring, since the gradient is only in this direction, it keeps a constant in this flow, one has to measure the derivative skewness along it, and we see it is order one. There's a little dip here for reasons that are experimental and not to be worried about, but it's fairly constant, order 1 up to a Reynolds number of 1,000, which is a high Reynolds number. The kurtosis, as you know, goes up as the Reynolds number goes down, and there is a fifth moment too, as well as a skewness. Both should be identically zero at high Reynolds number if you believe in local isotropy. Now, this is a subject, again, as I gave you a number of references, that's been well explored, and the reasons are best given in terms of large-scale flow characteristics, where you have these converging, diverging separatrix, and along the saddle point, the scalar collects, the cliff occurs, and this is seen both in carefully done experiments with rakes and in these very interesting numerics that Holzer and Sidger did, the same sorts of things with diverging, converging separatrix, hot and cold flow coming in from different directions, and the step is occurring where these things converge. Lots can be done with this. It's an established effect, and I'll just more or less show you, without going into detail, one can, since it's a third order function, instead of looking at all of these second order correlations that we hear so much about, one should be looking at third order correlations. So this is a third order correlation function where we have essentially three probes in the flow and we're varying them all relative to the other, and you get a characteristic shape, and we've explored that in some detail. It's not of relevance today, but this seems to be a fairly universal type of correlation function. We've varied the Reynolds number as well as the spacing of the probes, and the shape remains the same. The interesting point, the one extra point I want to make about the scalar, is that, of course, if you take away the mean gradient but still sprinkle the flow with scalar fluctuations, you'll still have sharp jumps in the scalar, but they'll be randomly oriented because there won't be a mean gradient in the flow. And this has been observed in the numerics of Shen and Craikman. This is a white noise calculation, but it doesn't really matter. And they point out that there's obvious intermittency of small scales, which show some tendency to concentration along lines of sharp demarcation between hot and cold fluid, ramp cliff-like structures. So the point is that the third moment and that one sees these odd moments when one imposes an asymmetry, a large-scale asymmetry in the flow, but if the asymmetry is taken away, the same sort of structures remain, but they are only reflected at the even moments. And so there we argue that there well may be a connection between the third moment and the fourth moment and so on and so forth. So the long-term objective, I suppose, is to be looking at why this anomalous scaling that we're all familiar with. So that is all I want to say about the scalar. The results, I think, are uncontroversial to most of the community. So let's go now to the experiment with the velocity shear. And so now we have a mean velocity gradient. I'll show you how we generate it in a wind tunnel, a linear gradient. And again, we have to measure along the gradient. If you flip the gradient, the statistics will have to change. If you want to have local isotropy at the small scale, then the skewness and so on have to be zero by symmetry. And so the question is to measure derivative statistics along the gradient. In this direction, of course, there is a skewness because of nonlinear energy transfer. So it's an experiment that requires probes, a carefully constructed flow, and probes measured in the direction of the gradient. And one can measure, with the probes close together, one can measure derivatives, one moves them further apart, and you can measure structure functions. And the particular statistics I'll be interested in are the skewness, again, which is du dy, normalized by the variance, its variance, and the skewness structure function, which is delta u delta u over some distance, delta y, again normalized by its variance. Again, the subject is made more difficult by the well-known fact that temperature, that velocity fluctuations are much less intermittent than temperature fluctuation. Here is a velocity trace and a temperature trace, and you see the much stronger intermittency in the temperature. And indeed, as is known, you can have intermittency in the temperature field without it occurring at all in the velocity field. At the second order, the velocity field is strongly isotropic, both at the inertial and the dissipation scales. And these very well-known experiments done by Saduki and Viravelli in 1994 show this, where they I won't go through the details here, but they measured ratios of different components of the spectrum in the inertial scales and found that their ratios obeyed local isotropy. For example, the transverse over the longitudinal has to be 4/3 and so on and so forth. And they did their experiments very carefully, and there was no controversy whatsoever that at the second order turbulence is locally isotropic, and that's become an established result. Now, and they had, of course, large-scale anisotropy. It was done in a boundary layer. Looking again now to the third moment again, we can do a little scaling argument. My results are not going to rely on this scaling argument, but of course the Reynolds number has to be high to look for departures from local isotropy, because otherwise the large scales are going to contaminate the small scales. The Lumley argument suggests that the skewness along the gradient should go down as R lambda to the minus 1. In the temperature, you saw it doesn't go down at all. It remains constant. The question is what happens in the velocity field. The flow apparatus we have at Cornell is a fairly large wind tunnel, a meter square, and we've used a shear generating screen, which is just a screen with different solidity wires, so the flow is slowed up more here than here, and then we put flow straighteners here to keep the flow parallel, and we fiddle it so we can get a mean velocity gradient here. And to get the higher Reynolds number, we've put our active grid here to give a higher turbulence intensity before the generating mechanism. And then we have hot wire probes downstream, one fixed and one moving, and we bring them right together to get a derivative and move them further apart to get a structure function. We get good mean profiles and RMS profiles. I won't bother you with these details. The more important thing is to show that the Reynolds number is high. This is a Reynolds number of nearly 1,000. First of all, we get these nice spectra. Second of all, and most importantly, is we have coherence and anisotropy at the large scale, because we have a flux down the gradient, so there's a cross-correlation between the velocity components. But that disappears this is a second-order quantity, local isotropy. Lumley's argument says this should go down to 7/3, and it disappears. And we do have a nice region where we don't have any significant contamination of the large scales on the small scales at the second order. And again, I've put some numbers here that those who are interested in shear flow measurements will see that these are comparable to other work of... it's essentially... This is less than point. This is the axis here. It's lower than 0.1. This is a coherence between the two components. So it's coherent at about 0.5 here, which is a healthy and then it goes to essentially zero. It's not. It's more like 6/3 the way it's going down. The spectra. One to look at spectra, you have to. It's best to compensate them, multiply by 5/3, and we get over two decades of inertial range. And this is this famous Saduki and Viravelli experiment done in the NASA Ames wind tunnel, the biggest wind tunnel in the world, and we're getting essentially the same inertial range width as they are. Okay. So what are the results? The skewness, in fact, goes down with Reynolds number. There's a lot of scatter. You saw that there was much more scatter in the scalar, and I've compiled a number of experiments. The first systematic attempt was with my student Gark in 1978, and we only could get up to about 400, and we noticed that it was going down with Reynolds number. As a result of that, Tavalouris's student in Canada, for Chichi, did the same experiment and managed to get to about 600, and his results are broadly consistent. There's a lot of scatter, but they're going down. And then here are our most recent experiments, again with scatter, with our active grid. But it's undeniable that the skewness is going down with Reynolds number. It's going down somewhat more slowly than the scaling argument, but it doesn't matter for the moment. The fact is that it's tending towards zero at high Reynolds number, which is in quite consistent with local isotropy. One should then start looking at higher order moments, fifth moments and seventh moments, to see whether because these fluctuations are more rare in the velocity than in the scalar, these large fluctuations, maybe it's showing up here, and so we also looked at the fifth and the seventh moments. Again, there are scaling arguments which will not bother me for the moment. When one looks at the fifth moment, so here's the third moment is going down, the fifth moment is holding relatively constant. Now, of course, that does not mean to say it won't go down at higher Reynolds number, but these results are showing a constant fifth moment, suggesting that although the very extreme fluctuations are getting through at the tails of the distribution, and so reflecting only in the fifth moment rather than the third moment. Let me look at a few statistics just to show you how we get these results. Here is a low Reynolds number. Here's the PDF. You can see it's skewed. If one integrates this by x cubed, you get the skewness PDF, and the difference between these areas, as I showed in Gibson's paper, is the skewness. And at low Reynolds number, it's about 0.7. Here's the sixth. Here's the fifth moment. It's not brilliantly converged here, but I'll show you some convergence. This is only done with 10 to the 7th points. When you take more points, we can get very good convergence. And the fifth moment is order 10. It's about 16th. And then you can see, speaker showed, that when you go higher and higher in order, convergence becomes very difficult. And I'll talk about the seventh moment maybe a little bit later on. So let's go to the higher Reynolds number. Oh, before I go to the higher Reynolds number, let me show you what happens when you look at the structure function. So now, you, instead of looking at the derivative, you move the probe along the shear, and here is the 0.7, here's the skewness, derivative skewness, and as you move the probe along, the skewness, there's a little bit of wobble here, which again is significant, but the main point I want to make here is it goes down to zero. This is the third moment. The fourth moment, of course, goes down. This is the intermittency. It has an intermittency, a derivative intermittency in the dissipation range, and goes down to a Gaussian value. This is a graph that you're all familiar with. And the fifth moment goes down as well. Okay, and there's a very weak scaling range, inertial range, in this of less than a decade because it's low Reynolds number. When we go to high Reynolds number, now this is around 900, and we've taken more data points now, and we're getting a better resolved set of statistics, and we're seeing now that the skewness is indeed small. It's about 0.2 for this measurement, and the graph shows it varies around about 0.1, 0.2 at this Reynolds number. The kurtosis is 11, showing it's a high Reynolds number result. The fifth moment is still order 10, as I showed you in the low Reynolds number. It was 16. Here it's 13 to 16. And again, these are much less well converged. Just to show you, the convergence is very, very good at the third and the fifth moment. Here we integrate along this direction, and the difference, these have to become flat, and the difference gives you the value of the moment. And at the third moment, it's very good. And the fifth moment, it's good. The seventh moment is suggestive. And I think we can get there, but we'll have to take much, much longer data. Again, it's not going to be very important to my result. Now, that was a dissipation measurement. When we go now and look in the inertial range, and so now we are at high Reynolds number still, but we've moved the probes along the gradient, and so we're at a inertial range distance which is about 50. The dissipation range goes to about 30 or something like that. And so here is the PDF, and instead of showing again the low skewness, the skewness now has gone up to a value of about 0.4. There's kurtosis is odd also, showing odd lobes, and the fifth moment again is around 14. Again, one can improve on this. Our findings are that one improves, things don't change significantly. What's important, of course, is this is 2 and this is 3.5. The heights of the lobes are quite different. And so what is happening is that we're moving from the dissipation range into the inertial range. At the dissipation range, at the third moment, the turbulence looks like locally isotropic, although at the fifth moment it doesn't. But when we move into the inertial range, we begin to see that there is, in fact, a healthy third moment. Here are some sort of structure functions. This is the Schooner structure function. I haven't plotted the dissipation range measurement here, which is sort of 0.1, and it rises up, and here is what is happening to the structure function in the inertial range, and the measurement I just showed you was taken here, and the value is about 0.4. The kurtosis structure function is again one you're all familiar with, about 10 in the near dissipation range, dropping to a Gaussian value, and you see because these are high Reynolds number, the inertial range is extending to about 1,000. And the fifth moment, unlike the third moment, which rises up, the fifth moment tends to the order of 10 even into the dissipation range. So these are this is a very, very strong violation of local isotropy at high Reynolds number. We've done a number of trials and so on under slightly different conditions. These are again high Reynolds number, and again there's scatter, but this is now extending back to the dissipation scale, and you see it rises up, it flattens out and comes down when you get into the integral scales. Here is again the kurtosis, and the fifth moment tends to be flat, and so this is a summary of a number of trials. Now the question is, one thing to convince you also is the nice thing about doing these experiments is one can pull out the shear generator and look at the same turbulence without shear. It's just grid turbulence, and here the structure function shows the skewness is wiggling around zero, never much about 0.1, higher than 0.1, and the fifth moment again is plus or minus one, very, very low, and of course the fourth and the sixth moments are consistent with the shear turbulence. They have high intermittency at the small scale, which disappears at the large scale. Now, these results are particularly strong violations of local isotropy, and one has to be careful that they're right, and one has to look indeed to see if there are any other results that back them up. Our early results that I did with my student Gark went up to 310, but again showed that the skewness went down fairly rapidly at low Reynolds number, but started to develop a little a scaling range at moderate Reynolds number. But as a result of this experiment, Tavalouris's group in Ottawa decided to do exactly the same experiment in their shear generating tunnel. His student was Fuchichi. And he managed to get up to a Reynolds number of 600, and the results are again quite consistent. Here is the derivative skewness at low Reynolds number. It's about 0.7 or 0.8, and it's going down with Reynolds number to about 0.4. But as these continue into the inertial range, they are all plateauing to a value of about 0.4 or 0.5, just exactly consistent with ours. So here is. These are all the different Reynolds numbers. The low Reynolds number, of course, is falling off more quickly. His higher Reynolds number is going more slowly, but they're all sitting together at the same value in the inertial range instead of having different values dependent on their dissipation range characteristics. So these fit in quite nicely to the results we have at high Reynolds number, and they suggest the following picture that, well, just to summarize, that the dissipation range skewness goes to zero. So here is the dissipation range. This is spacing increasing along the gradient. Dissipation range it peaks at around 5 or so. So as the R lambda increases, the derivative skewness goes to zero in the dissipation range, as we find. But as the R lambda increases, we see the following. That if we go look at the structure function, or the normalized structure function at low R lambda, it decreases like this. As the R lambda gets bigger, there's a decrease in the dissipation range, a beginning of a little scaling range, and then it falls off. A little bit higher, the scaling range gets bigger, and at our high Reynolds number range, of course, we're now getting very, very low values of skewness in the dissipation range, but it comes up and gives a plateau, and then and a much wider scaling range. You'll notice that the Tavoulouris experiments and our earlier experiments only and our low Reynolds number have a sort of a scaling range up to 100. With this new work, we're getting up to 1,000. So the heart of the matter, it seems, is that the inertial range looks in particularly bad condition in terms of the notion of local isotropy from these measurements, and at the dissipation range, at least at the fifth moment, also it looks as if the anisotropy is reflected at the fifth moment. I'll talk about that in a moment. These results I showed at the APS were a little premature, but I think we are corroborating. Certainly, we've now corroborated this fifth moment. The seventh moment, you can see I have poor divergence, but I don't have to worry about that particularly because the results are now showing that the third and the fifth moment tell much of the story. Let me finish by mentioning the motivation, of course, for this work is this Rampe-Cliff structure and trying to relate large-scale anisotropy to small-scale intermittency, and a lot of this work has been done by Pumier and Schramann, and of course Eric Skidger, but in particular Pumier and Schramann did some nice, some interesting DNS results and looked at, these were at low Reynolds number, but saw these Rampe-Cliffs, ubiquitous Rampe-Cliff structures in the passive scalar, but they saw them in the velocity too, suggesting the similarity and suggesting the measurements that we've done here, and asking could this be possibly exist, these Rampe-Cliffs exist at high Reynolds number in the velocity field as they do in the scalar field. And I think our results tend, whether that way of looking at it is correct remains to be seen, but our results tend to be showing that their intuition is correct, that what is happening is that even at high Reynolds number, the anisotropy is appearing in the small scales of the velocity field, and the fact that the scaling range is increasing with Reynolds number is very, very strong indication that this is not a Reynolds number limited experiment. It would be impossible when one sees an extended scaling range occurring as Reynolds number goes up and up, one doesn't imagine that this is not going to occur at even higher Reynolds number. Again, to recall this, much of the work in many of you are concerned with is trying to predict and understand the second order velocity structure function. As I remarked earlier, its departure from K41 occurs at a higher order. Therefore, we would have expected that these in this scheme, that we would have expected these aberrations, these anisotropies might occur at a higher order. And what we're finding, in fact, is at the derivative level, they're occurring at the fifth moment. In the dissipation range, they're occurring at the fifth moment as well. But in the dissipation range, even at high Reynolds number, it's occurring at the third moment. So let me just summarise the derivative skewness of a longitudinal velocity measured along the gradient. It's very important to note what we're measuring, which is a very good indicator of anisotropy. Approaches zero as R lambda goes to infinity. This is a result that will, makes completely consistent with local isotropy. However, in the inertial subrange, the skewness structure function of that same quantity doesn't go to zero, but it sits at around 0.5. So depending where you start at the dissipation range, everything seems to be raising up to a scaling to a scaling range of about 0.5. And this is a very, very strong violation of local isotropy. You know, it's suggestive of these. And just let me finish this. And then at the fifth moment derivative, in fact, it penetrates right down to the small scale. So instead of the fifth moment dropping to zero at the small scales, it always sits around 10. And that just develops a wider and wider scaling exponent as the Reynolds number goes up. So it's a situation that the third moment anisotropy can't penetrate quite to the dissipation range, but it does to the inertial range. Whereas the fifth moment, these very, very strong rare events even appear at the dissipation range. So my conclusion is that this Kolmogorov 41 postulate is strongly violated by these experiments, and certainly suggests that we should be looking at the so-called cascade in very different light. Thank you. By the third, First of all, I'm not talking about non-increasing or decreasing. I'm talking about second of all, I showed you the PDFs, and these are strong asymmetries in the PDF, and they occur whether you normalize it or not normalize it. I quite agree that one thing one can look at is the unnormalized structure functions without any normalization, and so you hit this is a second order structure function, which is roughly two-thirds when you compensate it. And the fourth order structure function, again, is roughly compensates to the four-thirds power. These are things you know well. Here is the third order structure function. That shouldn't exist if you have isotropy. And it's existing independent of normalization and showing a scaling range. So I don't see that there's no normalization whatsoever here. And as you change the Reynolds number, the length of
And
you're objecting to the second order. One could normalize by the mean gradient, for example. Would that be more acceptable to do? That would still give the same result.
It's best to normalize the same order quantity, and then you remove the
intermittency. What you mean, normalizing third order by? No, they're totally different statistics. The du dx to the n is nothing to do with symmetry conditions. It's to do with turbulence dynamics, and it's a very, very different quantity. Yeah.
Compared to normalizes your cloud capping, that's what we do. Uriel, you said we just get all that you have to stop editing for velocity, right?
This is numerics. Numerics, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing
in the experiment, no. No. No, no.
I have just one point to add to your graph, which is the graph of the fifth order moment.
Mm-hmm.
It took us 1 year to get this one point. This is done in the Reynolds number of R lambda of 2 times 10 to the 4, that is 20,000. In the atmosphere, about 30 meters above the ground. It took us a long time just because of the problems of convergence. So the fifth order moment does go down. That is, mm-hmm. it is no longer about a tenth, but it is about one-tenth as large, perhaps, in our measurement. Now, I can't say what happens to the seventh moment because I have absolutely no confidence
mm-hmm.
in that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible that fifth order moment takes much, much longer in Reynolds number for it to go down. Seventh order moment, perhaps, I don't know. Maybe it never goes down, or maybe it goes down out there somewhere. So there is, at any given Reynolds number, there is an order of moment which will not be zero. Or inversely, you know, extrapolating my limited experience, which is only at the fifth. For any given moment, it's conceivable that you have to go to inconceivably higher and higher Reynolds number for things to go down. So it's,
no.
I'm not contesting what you're saying.
No,
right
no.
There. But that's probably how.
Well, I mean, one can't talk about asymptotia. One can only look at what
yes.
one has.
I agree.
And again, the point I'm making here is that the third moment is showing the an ever increasing scaling range, which is very, very strongly suggested.
No.
Apparently. Uh-huh. You saw the scale. I mean, the high Reynolds number would go to y an eta of 1,000, and it drops off.
Right.
And the Kolmogorov scale is 10 or something like that. So it's two orders.
Two orders.
Yeah. Not as systematically. We're doing that now, but yeah, yeah. I mean, our real concern was the high order, the high Reynolds number. The fifth order, we've varied the data amounts and so on and so forth, and we don't get very different results. It's always order of 10. So, so.
Yeah, that's the question.
Delicate. That's delicate. I agree. Thank you. I'll have a look at it. I mean,
I just have to get this off my chest.